Welcome to this special edition of Life Between the Vines, working in the cellar at GoldenEye, Part 1. During the week of October 2nd, I spent 4 days working crush at GoldenEye Winery in Anderson Valley, the home of GoldenEye and Migration Wines, which are part of the Duckhorn Wine family. By visiting the Life Between the Vines website, you'll be able to check out 3 videos shot during this time. One shows the night harvest, and that's where you really get to see how efficient and fast the pickers are. Another video is a look into the crush itself, and the third is a salute to the GoldenEye crew. Here's where you can see the face behind the label. You can also find these videos and additional pictures on our Facebook page, as well as YouTube. In this program, I interviewed just about all the crew behind the scenes at the winery. I'd like to think that this gives a better perspective on not only how the wine is made, but just who is making it. This podcast will run in 2 parts, with part 2 going online November 12th. And we start off the program talking with the gentleman I probably spent the most time with working in the cellar, Bo Felton. So here we are, the first interview of my trip to GoldenEye Migration. Should I say Bo? Does that work?
Yeah, that works. So Duckhorn Wine Company, GoldenEye Migration. Yeah, that works.
So I was asking you before about your official title, and you were reluctant to actually say there was an actual title. So you're sort of filling in for the time being?
Yeah, more or less. I like to consider myself Cellar Hand Plus. So kind of do whatever I can to get it done.
Okay. We're working with the Chardonnay. We were talking about this before. Kind of give me a little synopsis of what you were telling me about what we're doing here this morning.
Okay, today is Monday morning?
Monday morning. Today's Monday, yeah.
And on Saturday, we received about 20 tons of fruit into here, Chardonnay. And right now, we have in tank about, let me think here, about almost 3,000 gallons or so of juice that's going to end up going down to barrel right now, and we're going to then inoculate with yeast this juice, and it'll be barrel fermented, and most all of it in here will go to the Migration Chardonnay program and different aspects of that program. So,
and about how many barrels are you looking at here?
So we're going to end up filling about, I think it's going to be about 40, 46 barrels today.
Okay.
And in the meantime, we'll also receive another 20 tons of Chardonnay grapes that we'll have to somehow turn into juice.
So the cycle starts all over again.
Exactly, exactly.
And how about how long is the Chard that you're doing today going to stay in these barrels?
It'll be in barrel for about 10 months. Usually we'll age on the lees after the fermentation lees, so we won't end up racking these barrels at all until we're ready to bottle. Unless, of course, you know, we have something come up with, if there are stinkers, if there's a little bit of an issue, we might rack off of the lees. But generally speaking, we'll do aging on the lees, and then we'll bottle it up in about 10 to 12 months.
We're going to come back to you a little bit later. Thanks.
No problem.
Cool. All right, what else can I do here?
Well, the gentleman who brought me up here is Neil Bernardi. And for you folks, you may remember we did a podcast with him probably about a year or so ago, right?
Yeah, out in Milwaukee, yeah.
So how you doing, Neil?
I'm doing great. It's a big day. We're out in the Anderson Valley at the GoldenEye Winery facility. It's rainy and cloudy, and there promises to be 2 more days of rain here. So a little bit of a nerve-wracking time, especially for Chardonnay winemaking. But we are right now staring at a big stainless steel press that we just filled with Chardonnay from the East Side Road Vineyard. And it's an exciting time because you get your first opportunity to kind of start your relationship with these. Well, you followed them in the vineyard, but as a wine, you get to see the kind of the first taste of the juice coming out. And it's always nerve-wracking, but also exciting because you get to taste it and know that you made the right call, or maybe, you know, nervous because you made the wrong call. But at any rate, it's the beginning of something for certain.
And yeah, it is a bit like everything is sort of riding on this moment, isn't it?
A little bit. And then, because to a certain extent, the quality of this wine, the resultant wine, is now it's at 100%, and we can only kind of go down from here. It has full potential at this point, and so if we make the right calls or the wrong calls, it hopefully stands to maximize quality from what came in from the vineyard.
Okay, what you had said was this is a bladder press we have right in front of us. You have 2 of them here, correct?
Right, we do. To our left, we have a Suter EPC 100. It's a big bladder press, and it has an open drain system. So it basically is one side's a colander and the other side's a balloon, and the balloon squeezes the grapes against the colander. Our cycle is such that it does a lot of different presses at low pressure, and so by doing that, we can get the great majority of the juice out far before we have to rely on high pressures to get juice out. And we always make a cut anyways. So we don't take that heavier pressed juice because it oftentimes has more phenolic material, more solids, more stuff like that.
Was that something you would sell off then, or?
We'll make it. We'll take a look at it. Oftentimes, it makes a good blender. It always has good kind of mouthfeel and texture. Mm-hmm. So we'll blend it back if it makes the wine a better wine. But otherwise, we'll find a spot for it.
Okay. And I know our listeners can't see this, but yeah. I'm going to have some pictures of it. We're coming out of the ladder press right here, which is just outside of the cellar here, and it's being pumped into one of the tanks behind me. Correct?
It is, right. And so we're going to take this fresh juice coming out of these Chardonnay berries, and we're going to put it directly into a cold tank. We've gassed the tank with dry ice, so there's a little bit of oxygen contact as it's getting squeezed out of the press, but after that it goes into a stainless steel tank that's filled with carbon dioxide, and so it's protected from the air from pretty much the moment it comes out of the berry. We'll settle it overnight, and most of the larger particulate stuff like dust on the berries or grape solids and stuff like that will fall down to the bottom of the tank, and then we'll rack the clear juice off of the mixture and we'll go straight to barrel with that, and then that'll ferment in barrel. We're actually standing also in front of a whole lineup of barrels from yesterday's wine that we pressed that now went into wooden barrels.
Yeah, these were the barrels that we just worked on a little while ago, and then I see James over there has just shaking out that sediment from the bottom of the tank. So there'll be a picture on the site of that. It's almost a brown, milky look to it.
It is. It's interesting. Lees are one of the most important parts, especially of Chardonnay winemaking. It's a really important tool to kind of be aware of. And so what we do is we'll take those lees from the bottom of the tank. We'll actually settle them overnight. We'll take the clear juice and put that into a barrel. But we'll also take a look at the taste of those lees. And it seems kind of funny because it is probably a good amount of grape solids and some dirt and dust and kinds of stuff, but it can oftentimes add a lot of weight and complexity and also nutrients to fermentations. And so we'll go back, we'll taste that, and then we'll add it if it makes the cut, if it makes the grade, back equivalently on an equal basis to all the different barrels.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that. So it's a little bit of it goes back then.
Yeah, a little. It can or maybe not. Depends on kind of what we taste coming out of the bucket. The other thing that's important as we go through fermentation is that yeast builds trillions and trillions of cells during fermentation. They fall down to the bottom of the barrel, and what we'll do is we'll mix those in depending on the kind of the weight of the wine and the need for complexity, the need for richness of that particular wine. We'll do what's called battenage, and so we'll mix those yeast lees up into the mixture so that they resolubilize into the wine, and that gives different kinds of micronutrients.
We're standing in the way, so we're going to move. I'm walking towards the side so we don't get killed. Yeah, getting killed is bad.
It's very bad. It's very bad around here.
One last thing, and I want to let you go. I know you got a lot of work to do. So I know these barrels are going to be moved to make way for more barrels that are going to obviously be filled from what just got pressed. But you still have more grapes coming in.
We do, although because of this rain, we're kind of at a point where, I wish more grapes were ready, because this rain is going to kind of, it's going to be a problem. It's going to both dilute the sugars a little bit, but it's also going to potentially influence more kind of fungal pressures that are going to start to grow, like basically rot. So what we'll have to do is every grower, we're going to go through every block, and every grower's going to have to cut out any potentially rot infected clusters, and that's just part of the game that we kind of play with the Mother Nature. So I don't know. Sometimes you get lucky and you don't have a rain in October 3rd or 2nd or whatever it is, and sometimes you get a rain. So we'll just have to deal with it and make the best wine we can. And I don't think I really know what a normal year is at this point. I mean, every year has its own challenges and its own particularities. I mean, this has been a challenging one. Actually, 2010, 2011 have been really distinctly different than anyone I've seen. I mean, I've been in this business this is my 15th harvest, but they've been distinctly different because of how cool they've been with just a very cold spring. And so, I don't know, it's every year is a different year, and we kind of play it by ear and do the best we can.
You think this might be just one big different cycle, or do you think this is a global warming thing?
I don't know. My perspective is so, from a climatic perspective, is so limited that I don't know what is what's just a normal long-range cycle versus a short-range cycle. La Niña, El Niño, I don't know. I wouldn't be adequately informed to be able to say.
So it is what it is, and you've got to deal with it.
Exactly right. Exactly.
Yeah, and again, for our listeners, so they understand that today is October 3rd. We have a three-day forecast of nothing but rain here in Anderson Valley, which is something that normally doesn't happen this time of year. So obviously, it does have everybody a little bit on their on the edge of their seats.
Right, and you know, it's interesting. Cooler, it's kind of the mixed, the challenge and the promise of making wine from very cool climates. So Anderson Valley and Green Valley, from where most of our Chardonnay comes from, are very cool sites, and so they tend to ripen quite a bit later than other parts of both the Russian River and just in California in general, North Bay. And so we have more opportunity because we're the grapes are on the vine longer. We have more opportunity to encounter rain, storms, and heat spike events, and all these kinds of things. But that being said, the promise of the potential of the grapes is that much better because they have more time to mature, more time to get riper, more interesting flavors, and all that other stuff.
So the whole idea is there's promise.
There's a lot of promise. I'm really excited. I mean, I'm nervous a little bit, but I'm really excited about this vintage. It's like 2010, but we had a big heat spike in 2010, which was a challenge. But this is like, it's a very cool season. It's a late season, so I think it's going to be great for flavor and great acidity. Elegant wines, I think, is what we're going to see come out of 2011.
Well, I wish you nothing but a great harvest, and we're going to be here for a few more days, so we'll catch up with you some more as we go.
Sounds great. Thanks.
Thanks. That's the juice on the press. And I'm here with James Allen. He's one of the cellar rats here, and what is your official title?
Harvest intern?
You're asking me that question.
Yeah. Never been told the official title, I guess, but...
There's a whole world of potential then.
Right. Yeah. All kinds of title names.
So how long have you been doing this?
2007 was my first harvest, and then I went and finished my degree at Colorado State, and then worked harvest last year in New York City.
Say that again. You worked harvest where?
In New York City.
You worked harvest in New York City?
Yeah. In Manhattan.
What were you doing in Manhattan?
I was working at a place called City Winery, and... They make about 6,000 cases of wine a year, and it's in Soho, in Manhattan, and we source grapes from upstate New York, Long Island, Oregon, and then the majority of our fruit comes from Napa Valley, our Cult Cab vineyards.
Interesting. Yeah, that's why you got my reaction of kind of like harvesting in New York City. Sure. Yeah, I've heard that before. So anyway, what happens after you finish up this harvest here?
Most likely, I'll be going to Chile, possibly Australia. For the harvest down there in the spring, and then coming back to California. And I'll just continuously work harvests on either hemisphere for a couple years.
Would you likely be coming back to Goldeneye, or is it just wherever you can get an opportunity?
Working two vintages at a winery is, I think, very, very beneficial. So hopefully I could do that, but who knows? That's a whole year away.
And how do you find out about the opportunities in Chile?
Contacts are the best always in any country. I have a couple people I've met from down there, and then friends of friends and all kinds of contacts. That's the easiest, but you can also just contact the wineries directly. And usually wineries are pretty, they like exchanging cultural knowledge or just winemaking knowledge between wineries. So it's kind of everyone recognizes it as a beneficial thing.
Sure, tapping different ideas. So is your ultimate goal to become a winemaker then?
Absolutely.
Have you ever made anything of your own at this point?
Yes. I've made a couple batches, Riesling, Cabernet Sauvignon. Nothing crazy, mostly at home I brew beer. I've been doing that since I was about 15. So that's what really got me into winemaking is, but I like winemaking because as a horticulture student, I was able to combine, you know, the horticultural knowledge and the fermentation science. And you don't do that as much with beer. It's more of a recipe, so.
So maybe a little bit more creativity on the wine side.
It's just a different focus of creativity, I think. You know, there's a lot of creativity in both, but in winemaking, I think you have to be more scientifically creative, whereas in beer, it's a lot of flavor testing, and it's like baking bread or, you know, a really interesting recipe of some kind. You're still dealing with yeast, which is, you know, kind of the magic behind both, I think, but it's really a very, very different beast.
Excellent.
Do you think you'd ever get into the idea of growing your own grapes, or are you more interested in, you know, the sort of the actual end of it?
Right now, the winery is more interesting for me, but the viticulture is vastly interesting as well. So, yeah.
All right, I'm going to let you get back to work. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
I'm here with Nathan Miller. Nathan, you are the vineyard manager, correct?
Yes, sir.
So thanks for giving me a couple of minutes of your time. So we're looking at some of the pictures you had taken from the harvest, which has just been over the last few days.
Yeah.
Can I say weeks, too, as well?
Mainly the last week and a half. We really just got rolling this last week. We brought almost 125 tons into the winery in 6 days.
That's amazing.
We have primarily all shear-picked. So the quality we feel is higher with a shear-picked fruit. It's one of the things that I learned in the Central Valley with doing table grapes.
Could you explain that to our listeners, what that means?
They look like little scissors.
Okay.
They're about 1.5 inches long and about a quarter inch wide. So they're very small and very short.
And very delicate.
Very delicate with the Pinot Noir and the Chardonnay that we have. And we have Pinot Gris here, too. We also have a small block of Gewürztraminer. And if you didn't use shears to pick the Gewürztraminer, they're out there sawing with the knife to try to get it off.
Yeah, I'll bet.
We also feel that when you shear pick, when you grab the cluster, it doesn't break the skin. They don't grab it to try to rip it off like they do with a knife, so they don't break the skin. So when you put it in the box or the macro bin, there isn't a bunch of juice in the bottom of the box. Mm-hmm. So there is more actual juice going into the wine, and you're getting the actual true flavors of what we produce out there in the field.
And not having a lot of waste in the process.
Exactly.
Okay.
That's what we're looking for, not a lot of waste. We found that we can save 5 gallons minimum a macro box by shear picking. So over 1,000 boxes, that's quite a bit of stuff. That's a few bottles of wine.
That's pretty valuable. Wow.
Yeah.
How do you fall onto something like that? Just sort of trial and error?
It's a little bit of trial and error, but you know, like I said, I used to work in the Central Valley, which is a central San Joaquin Valley, mm-hmm. where your breadbasket, where all you guys in the Midwest get pretty much all your fruits and vegetables from.
Yep.
And working with table grapes, that's what they primarily use to pick them, because they don't want to break any of the berries, because when they put them into cold storage, they'll get different fungal growths, and you don't exactly want to eat that kind of stuff.
Nobody wants to eat that stuff, no.
No. So that's something that I learned when I was down there. Mm. We decided to bring it here and try it out. We had one crew pick with shears. We had one crew pick with knives. And what we found out at the end of the day is the quality of the fruit was better that was coming out. The guys were less tired. Okay. And we were gaining juice. So it was a win-win situation. So why not?
Yeah. Was it a huge investment? I know shears can be very expensive.
Shears can be a little bit more expensive. Regular knives, I think somewhere around $10. You're looking at $15 to $20 a pair of shears. Mm-hmm. And a guy could snap a couple pairs of shears sometimes in a night if we're having a bad night.
Wow. That's just from, you know, like a heavy duty vine then.
Yeah. Or what they do is they miss. They're picking in where there's fruit and they can't see a wire, and they clip a wire and it snaps the side off. And we always have a couple extra pairs of shears with the tractor drivers, and the supervisors are always carrying a couple extra pairs of shears. The guy just turns around and goes, "That I broke it," hand them a new pair, and off to the races they go.
That makes sense. Now, when we started looking at these pictures, you were talking about the night harvesting.
Night harvesting, we primarily started last year. Another vineyard manager in Anderson Valley, Paul Ardruni with Ardruni Vineyard Management, he and Ted Lemon really kind of got that started here in Anderson Valley. And we were a little resistant to it at first, but went out, we looked at a couple of picks, and we said, let's try it. Let's see how the guys respond to it. And the guys will, they beg for it now.
Hmm.
It's cool.
Is it because of the heat mostly?
Well, yeah, it's part of it's because of the heat, but you know, the guys just like it. They feel like they can get more fruit put in a box, so they're making more dollars per hour working at night. And it's cooler is the big thing, and the fruit quality I feel is better coming into the winery.
Is there any issue with anything getting missed? I mean, I'm looking at them, and obviously you've got high intensity lights on these as they go. But can that be somewhat of a factor at all?
There can be a couple of clusters mixed, but usually the supervisors fall on or out behind. And okay. I mean, if you go out and look at some of the stuff that we've done, 99.5% of the fruit is off the vine. There might be a little second crop left here and there, yeah. But I mean, it's pretty much gone.
Well, these guys have been doing it for a long time. They know what they're doing.
These guys, we've been doing this now for 5 years. We went in-house farming 5 years ago. I was brought in and responsible for building a whole crew and getting everything rolling for us in-house. So a lot of these guys have been with us now for a while, and they even worked for the vineyard management company that we had before. It was a little bit of an upgrade in quality stance that we had, mm-hmm. but I feel that they've adjusted really well. These guys do an awesome job.
So as vineyard manager, obviously the winemakers are going to be making the call about when things are going to be picked, or is that a decision you make with them? Or
It is a decision that we somewhat make together, but I come in here and I go, what looks good to you? And give me a list. If there's a bunch of stuff, give me a list of priorities and we'll get it in here as fast as we can.
So you're also the choreographer.
Yes. It's a delicate dance. Sometimes you're salsaing, sometimes you're tangoing, and sometimes you're trying to sidestep the landmines.
Or in this case, maybe you're doing a little bit of the backstroke.
Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. So is this giving you a lot of pain? I mean, I know this is what you do, and you're going to overcome whatever you have to do, but this is unusual. We've got 3 days of rain. You're right in the heart of harvest.
Last year we had something similar to this. We will make preparations to try to make this happen as best we can. It's a late season, and one of the guys that I know, they call it farming, but it really should be called gambling. But the word gambling was already taken. Yeah, so yeah, it's really, we don't need to go to Vegas because we roll the dice with millions of dollars every day. And Mother Nature can come in and swipe it from us in just a second.
I think if people who drank wine, who love wine out there, could really understand how precarious this whole situation is, they'd get that this is really a difficult business.
It's not a business for the faint of hearts. A lot of people out there have a grandiose idea of, oh, I want to own a vineyard and I want to own a winery. And then people like myself really enlighten them to what really goes into this, because they don't know what the backbreaking work that goes into this and the long hours. Frost control during the spring, and you're up 22 hours a day because you're running frost control at night and you have crews working during the day. There's no time to take off. We also have frost control coming and going. So we have frost control during harvest too, to make sure that we get some blocks that don't defoliate and get any damage and make the wine that we want.
I think glamour is easily defined. The glamour of the wine business is easily defined in two words: rubber boots.
Yes, rubber boots is a good one. Blood, sweat, and tears is probably my other one. These guys, there's a lot of blood, sweat, and tears that go into putting in the winery, what we put in here. And I define this as a relay race, okay? There are four parts to that relay race, and we, the vineyard department, run the first race. And if we don't run our race the best that we can't get our amigos out in front to help win that race. It comes to the winery, that's our second leg. It goes to the marketing and sales, that's our third leg. And then it ends up with the consumer as the fourth leg, and they bring it home.
Which points to the whole idea of you've got a great team going on here.
Oh, I couldn't ask for some better guys. I've worked with some great people over the years, but these guys have really poured it on over the last couple of years and have really helped increase the standards. We keep trying to raise the bar every year and try to outdo ourselves.
Well, I think the results are in the bottle. I think you guys have done a great job.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thanks for the time, Nathan.
You're welcome.
Okay, I'm here with Darren Delmore. And do you have an official title or?
Not really. No.
So I could officially call you a cellar rat then?
Yes, you could. Absolutely.
Okay. And that's with no offense of any sort.
None at all. None taken.
So where are you from originally, Darren?
San Luis Obispo, California.
So you're native Californian?
Yes. Yeah.
So you've grown up around this business to some degree anyway?
Yeah. My family's in the restaurant business in a little town called Shell Beach in California. And so kind of the first wines I got to try were through the restaurant and the wine list we had. And started a slow passion for it back then. That's probably when I was about 20.
You've done some work in the Southern Hemisphere, right?
Yeah, exactly. I work for Two Hands Winery in the Barossa Valley.
Oh, Two Hands. Very cool. Yeah. And You did that first, or were you here first in California first?
I did two hands first in 2010, and then came to Goldeneye same year, but for the Northern Hemisphere harvest.
Was there any kind of a huge adjustment for you to go from that kind of winemaking to what's done here in California?
Absolutely, especially with Pinot Noir. Down there we were doing Shiraz and mainly the Rhone varietals, and you know, for instance, no punch downs, pump overs, and a completely different style of winemaking, different barrels, barrel sizes, and really interesting to learn both approaches.
Now, I've done both a pump over and a punch down. Tell me, for our listeners, what would the difference be from, I guess, a winemaking point of view?
Well, pump over is purposely adding more air to your fermenting batch of red wine, and so certain varietals need that, like Syrah, because they could sometimes get reduced just by nature and stink a bit, and where Pinot Noir is requires more delicacy, and so just by punching down manually is a little more gentle, does the same job but in lesser time and in a more gentle fashion.
And do you think is this a road to becoming a winemaker one day? Or
yeah, absolutely. I make my own wines at home, and this year I won my first gold in a big competition. So definitely, I do these small carboy fermentations at home. Zach thinks I'm crazy, but sometimes they turn out good, sometimes they turn out okay. But this year I'm making my first barrel here, and then next year I might try to do something on a small commercial level.
You just said carboy. I'm not familiar with what you're talking about.
Yeah, they're like 5 to 6 gallon glass containers, and they're used in a lot of home brewing, but I found that you could actually make excellent white wine and rosé wines in glass, and occasionally you can make a good red wine, but you got to use oak chips, so it's a little different process.
So that's a glass version almost of what you'd see sort of like spring water delivered in, that kind of a thing, right?
Exactly, right. Exactly, yeah.
Cool. Well, I wish you a lot of luck. Darren, thanks for taking some time out of your incredibly busy day. I appreciate it.
Definitely, definitely.
I'm here with Jose Luis. How you doing, Jose?
Pretty good.
So just tell me, how long have you been working here at Goldeneye?
About 3 years, I would say. On and off, you know, mostly just bottling. And then it's my second year during harvest as an intern, so it's pretty good.
So is it something down the road you might want to kind of get into the wine business, do you think? Or I know you said you're also in construction as well.
Yes, I like this job. It's pretty straightforward, you know. Not too much pressure on me or anything. It's just nice to have this job, yeah.
Okay, here's the $64,000 question. Are you a wine drinker?
I like sweet wine. Yes, I drink it, yeah. It's I don't know, it's all in your tongue, you know, your taste buds. If you don't enjoy it, drinking it, but I like the smell.
So maybe you like it before it's fermented.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I tried it and it tastes good. Maybe someday.
So as far as you're concerned right now, your future is you'll plan to be here. Is it strictly harvest, or do you work any other part of the year here at all?
No, I work, we actually bottle on January, and like on around April or something like that, and then on June. So I'll be working again in here for those during bottling, yeah.
So between your filling with construction gigs or... Yeah. Do you work at any other winery at all?
No, this is the only one, yes.
Good, that's how it should be.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Only one.
Excellent. Jose Luis, thanks very much for talking to me. I appreciate it.
No problem, man.
It's been a pleasure working with you, too. I'm back with James Allen. At this point, the rain has kind of slowed things down to a crawl here, but we've got a beautiful day going on. So what's going to happen today?
I think really everyone's looking at the weather reports and trying to figure out if this is a real break or if this is just kind of a trick. You know, I think with all the rain we got, it's going to take quite a while for it to recoup back up to the bricks that we need. If the season's really come to an end and it's really going to start raining consistently, then we really need to just start picking and get everything in as high sugar as we can. And hopefully it's going to be high enough bricks to get up the alcohol we want and the concentration we want.
And fall and winter is primarily rain around here, right?
From what I understand, yes. I haven't been up in Anderson Valley previous to this season, but generally in California, there's this kind of October 15th, October 20th date that everyone's dreading and hoping to make it to or get everything picked before. And it's fast approaching. You know, it's been a cold season, so the acid's still pretty high on these grapes. And luckily, the cool thing about the rain is that it can dilute the acid a little bit, and somehow the sugar can recover faster than the acid, so that we can end up with a more balanced fruit.
So with luck, we're looking for maybe a couple of hot days. I mean, a few hot days with luck.
That would be beautiful. Yeah, get these vines starting their photosynthesis again. Start them, you know, sucking up all this water and getting it evaporated out of them, and hopefully getting the grapes back up to the proper ripeness.
Great. Well, real pleasure working with you. Thanks a lot for putting up with me this week.
Thanks for all the help, Ray.
All right, I'm here with Casey. I've been working with you for a couple of days now, and is your official title, could I call you Cellar Rat, or, I mean, does it go beyond that? I mean, tell me.
Cellar Rat's a good name, but officially I think my title is Harvest Production Intern, so basically I'm just doing all the grunt work, kind of, just punching down all the tanks and moving bins, washing bins, you know, helping on the sorting table, pretty much doing whatever these guys ask of me, and which is great. It's a great experience. I'm really enjoying it. I'm a cellar rat, I guess. I like sounds good to me.
So how long have you been doing this?
Just a month almost. Just a little more than a month. I just got into this. I just graduated from BU in Boston, and got a job through my aunt Cindy at the tasting room, and totally stumbled onto it. I like wine, but you know, I couldn't really tell you the difference between Chardonnay and Sauvignon Blanc or Pinot Gris and Pinot Noir before I came here. And
let me get this straight just real quick. So you like wine, but you're not necessarily I would call a geek at this point yet.
No, not a geek, definitely. I like the taste of wine, but that's about where my knowledge and my enjoyment began and ended.
But my impression here is that, obviously, this is something you like. I mean, nobody does this job unless they like this. This is hard-ass work. Sorry, this is really hard work. Oh, who cares?
No, it's really difficult. But, you know, working with guys like this makes it really easy. The pay doesn't hurt either. But it's, you know, in a great spot like the Anderson Valley, Northern California. It's just beautiful. I mean, you can't really ask for much more than this. I mean, hard work's good.
Hard work's always good. Makes you sleep good at night.
That's right. Yeah. I sleep like a baby.
Well, it's like Nate was saying, it's good to go home dirty.
Oh, it's great to go home dirty. I you know, if this shirt's clean at the end of the day, then that's a bad day.
I'm kind of missing your sort of swim trunk looking shorts.
With the better forecast, I think I decided to hold off on that. Maybe get some dry pants for a change. But maybe if it warms up here a little bit, I'll bring the swim trunks back out.
Well, it sounds to me, and sadly I won't be here to see that, but it sounds to me like the next 4 days, if the weather does pan out, I was just talking to James about that, you guys could be just going absolutely nuts here.
Yeah, probably. I mean, they're going to have to get all the fruit off the vines as quickly as they can. They're worried about mold and, you know, all the water being absorbed by the grapes and all that kind of stuff. So it's going to be kind of, you know, you wait and you just kind of twiddle your thumbs while the rain comes, and then it's full bore right after, and you take in as much as you can, as quickly as you can, and just try to keep up and keep it going.
You guys have kept pretty busy here as you've gone. Let me digress, though, real quick. What was your degree in?
Environmental analysis and policy. So kind of similar, but pretty different.
So do you think you're going to end up continuing on? At least, I know that's, you know, you've only been doing this for a little while, but do you think you might want to create a future in this business?
I'd like to see where it takes me, for sure. I mean, it's just been given a good opportunity here. Definitely, it's such a great winery. It's such a great facility, great place. I mean, I could go on, but definitely want to see how it plays out and kind of ride the ride, as it were, just kind of ride the harvest. Maybe I've been thinking about going down south maybe for the spring. Maybe doing something in Australia, New Zealand, or South Africa, all of which are places that I wanted to go otherwise, and, you know, working down there would work perfectly. So we'll see where it takes me.
Well, I've seen you work. You're a hard worker. If anything, you're like constantly going at it here. So, you know, it seems to me you'd have a future in this kind of business, but, you know, you just kind of carve it out as you go, huh?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I mean, you know, hard work's good, and I like it. It's good. I mean, I like working hard, and especially when the rewards are great here too. So it makes it really easy.
You got a great crew here. Yeah. Well, my wish for you is that you truly do become a geek.
Oh, thank you. I'm already a geek in some respects. Let's make sure I'm a wine geek too. We're gonna add that to the list.
Thanks, Casey. Appreciate it.
Take care.
All right, you too.
Thanks, man. Good pleasure working with you.
Yeah, it was great to have you here.
I'm here with Carla, and we're in the office over at the winery. Carla, what do you do here at Goldeneye?
I am the Vineyard and Winery Administrative Assistant.
And what does an administrative assistant do?
I manage payroll, safety and compliance, just kind of general admin help.
And how long have you been here, Goldeneye?
I have been here for now 2.5 years.
Great. And you and I were talking the other day. You're originally from Oakland, if I remember right.
Yes. Grew up in Oakland, born in Peru. Came to the States when I was 3 years old.
You were born in Peru. How cool.
Yeah, definitely. Family came here when I was 3, just kind of to get a better life and live the American dream, I guess.
And are you?
I'm living the California dream.
Nothing wrong with that. Is it simply a job for you? Do you have a passion for wine? Are you a wine drinker?
Yes, I have a huge passion for wine. My dad started me off when I was young with French and Italian wines, Spanish wines as well. And I actually hope to either get into viticulture or enology at some point in the next few years here.
So you'll be planning to go back to school then?
Yes, planning to go back to school, either a program down in SLO, San Luis Obispo, or up at Sonoma.
Is that the local slang for San Luis Obispo?
SLO, yeah.
So it's just easier to say because it's such a mouthful?
I think so.
No, that's good. It's good to know that. Was your plan to, is it more like a management thing? Would you like to be out there making the wine, or do you know what you're thinking about?
No, not management at all. I've been working in an office now for almost 20 years, and I'm getting a little...
That's enough.
Yeah. It's fun, but I definitely want to get out there into the vineyard and work with the grapes and at some point have my own, you know, acreage and all that good stuff.
There are more and more women winemakers, especially in the Napa area, which is really impressive, and it's certainly been a tough struggle for them, but they're doing awfully well.
Yeah, they are. And I think even less women on the vineyard side of it. I don't know. There's probably a few out there, but a little bit harder as well because you got to manage a large crew of guys. So.
Yeah, so that could be a little bit of a challenge, I'm sure, guys being guys.
Yeah, it could be. I think because of the cultural boundary that I cross, because I am Latina, it makes it a lot easier, especially here working with these guys. You know, we can chat it up in Spanish, and we also have the same background, and we have the same understanding of, you know, family and all that, so it helps out.
Yeah, that's the interesting thing about this winery. I've got to meet a lot of people over this period of time. Just about everybody here speaks a certain degree of Spanish, which is great because this is, you got to communicate with people.
Yeah, definitely. Everybody that doesn't learns it at some point, and it's just because it's necessary. You know, all the workers out there speak Spanish, and a lot of the people here in the winery even. So it's absolutely necessary. And if you don't know it before you get here, you definitely pick it up, and you know, within a year.
I don't think you have much of a choice if you want to be able to talk to people. It just makes sense.
Right.
So you talked about European wines. Are you a California fan now?
Yes, absolutely. I have to say the Northern Hemisphere is actually probably more of my favorite. I like some Argentinian, some Chilean wines, but definitely love California wines. Totally different from European wines. Both great, and both have their pluses and all that.
Do you have a favorite? Are you Cab? Are you Pinot? I mean, anything in particular? Are you a white fan?
My favorite is actually Cab Franc.
Really?
Yes.
Now that is interesting.
It is a little bit unusual. I think it's because it's somewhere between a Cab and a Zin. You know, it's got the nice fruitiness, but it also has the big backbone that Cabs have. So I really love it, and it's also rare. So it's even funner when you find a really great Cab Franc.
Carly, I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me, and thanks for putting up with me being around here.
Yeah, sure. Thanks for coming by. Thanks for visiting, and hope you had a good time.
How could you not? That'd be impossible.
I know. It's wonderful up here.
Thanks for listening to part one of the GoldenEye Winery podcast. Part two will go online November 12th. You can learn more about GoldenEye and Migration Wines by going to goldeneyewinery.com or by visiting duckhornwineshop.com.